I think that one of the possible positive things within working and thinking the archive, so to speak, could be something like a matter of the idea of synchronizing things. And when I did some my preparations for the talk today and for the upcoming book, I stumbled upon a very old pop song, and I think it really brings us close to the
caution, caution, caution to prevent electric shock. Do not remove cover. No user serviceable parts inside. Refuse servicing to qualified service personnel. Let this be the epicenter for my heart. Cupid put too much poison in the dark. This is the epicenter for my heart. Because it's gone, gone, gone. And life goes on and on.
Okay. So I'll come back to the lyrics this instant. Because I think, ah, Quatsch. So, a lot of the words used within the lyrics, I think, part of what we are going to discuss when it comes to archives and reverse engineering as, let's say, a mode of self-reflective, intellectual work, so to speak. I think that what is the black box of history, so to speak, that's something I'd like to address very briefly. And I think that when it comes to this research topic, I briefly sketched in the beginning, that's at least to me an affair of the heart, and sometimes the public discourse wasn't that welcoming dealing with these questions, because there's a certain approach towards that topic when it comes to history writing, and especially Austrian film history writing. And I think that's interesting. And, because it's gone. I think that's something we can also come back within the discussion or the things I'd like to talk about. I'd like to take a step back and say, okay, where are we with reverse engineering and the humanities? That's not the most likely connection, I think, to make. I think there are a lot of interesting fields dealing with this idea of reverse engineering, but maybe not naming it reverse engineering. So I think that, and I will talk about it when it comes to historiography, I think at least from the 60s onwards, we already doing something like reverse engineering, but on different levels and with different vocabularies maybe, but it's still there, or it already is there. And especially interesting for me, because also I'm also a literary studies person, is the idea of narration and the theory how to narrate things, because that directly influences our idea when we tell history or retell history, so to speak, and to make things writable, how we write history and how we make it available on a level of reading, so the readability of history, so to speak. When it comes to archives, I think it's a matter of logistics in the end, that I think there's something like a threefold understanding of this term necessary, that it's an institution, that it's a very heterogeneous concept of collection, and it also should be some like techne, so really the proactive side of archive. I think that it's like Sleeping Beauty. Your prince is not going to come. You have to wake up for yourself. And I think that's something that's really, necessary, especially within the archive world. And, there's a big responsibility towards the holdings and towards the open public. I think that, and especially when it comes to the female history, of Austrian film history, this responsibility doubles in a way, because some of the production companies even say, okay, if you find that film somewhere, go screen it, we don't care. And on the other hand, the open public just doesn't know about the films that are there, because there's something like a filmic canon, of course, and how we are going to address that canon, even on a critical level. I think that's something that comes, that matters here. If you look at the big research reports, also from officials, there's always this concept of dividing institutions among the frontier. If you are going to make research possible, if you're going to make things available in a way, or if you're doing and carrying out the research yourself. And I think that, at least for me, the archive could be a possibility to gap that bridge. And I think, it makes, especially when it comes to particular examples, so to speak, in a greater framework. So, for instance, the history of female Austrian filmmaking within the framework of film history in general, so to speak. I think it's a positive approach to that problem, so to speak, because when you're doing research yourself, you will be better in helping others doing research. I think that's really like going on back to the opening the black box of research, like opening the black box of history, so which is in the end reverse engineering. Something that's I'd say something like a recent development that we are facing a lot in the archival work is that researchers approach us with the idea, okay, hand over your material and we take care of the rest, which is thanks but no thanks in the end. I think there's a number of problems combined with that. I think, yeah, it's a neo-positivistic approach in the end, because gathering all the material this material is not research in the end. And, I think that there's sometimes this really a lack of understanding for archival material and for an archival approach that is necessary to reverse engineer, for instance, film history. And, I even recently was approached by a film scholar here in Vienna, and he said, "Lo, we are going to participate in an international project, and yeah, just give me all your filmographic data and all the films on file, because yeah, we are participating in this project because that's an easy way for us to get to filmic material." And I think that doesn't work in the end. And this is really counterproductive to this intellectual logistics that should be part of every archival approach towards, that is in a way a positive one. When it comes to history and historiography, I think it's really necessary to say, okay, please step away from the Hegelian concept of history. I think that's something that still we need to keep saying, because in the 60s we really had something like the idea of rethinking the relationship of this critical relationship between language and reality. And this is really a fragile connection between language and reality. And I think to say, okay, look, there is really a big part of fiction within telling history, I think this really enables us with the possibility to say there's a critical approach towards the traditional epistemological concepts of how to think about history and what should be part of history. And if you look at the Austrian film history and how it is written, you get the impression most of the times that female authorship within film shouldn't be part of that. And that's a pity, at least. And I think that science, language, not only describe reality, there's a direct impact on that reality as well, and that's something we have to take into account. And there really is the necessity to rethink these given categories, the given traditional understanding of history. I already mentioned this idea of a black box of history. In conclusion, I think there's no meaning in history itself. There's only historiography and giving meaning to history. And therefore, using this concept, concepts like narration and interpretation, So these things happen and they are used heavily when it comes to writing of history. And there's also, I think, the necessity to finally give up this idea of history as a success story of linearity and progression. That's not happening. It never did this way. I mentioned Hayden White here, which also started from a literary studies background and then moved towards the philosophy of history, so to speak. And in one of his major papers, The Burden of History, from 66, he writes, quote, "We require history that will educate us to discontinuity more than ever before. For discontinuity, disruption, and chaos is our lot," unquote. And there's something like, I think it really, really pinpoints to this need to deconstruct this mimetic variation of representation within historiography, also when it comes to film history. And any given representation needs something to be, I don't know, self-reflexive and take, I think, certain aspects into account. On one hand, it's because there's a difference in the matter of space and time, at least, between the object of desire, so to speak, and the representation. And the representation needs to be considered non-mimetic. There's something like an effect of blurring things. On the other hand, there's the representation. It adds something, so to speak, from its own mediality to the object it's describing, and it would like to describe. And this representation is something produced, something in the best sense artificial. And last but not least, there's a necessity to move away from this classical hermeneutical tradition. There's not only one everlasting interpretation. There's only a series of interpretations, a chain of negotiations, so to speak. And this allows us to criticize the canon and a canon of texts as well, like the canon of texts that are interpreting what is preserved, so to speak, and what is shown and shown again and again and again. And don't make any mistake, when you look at the film history of Austria, for instance, that only 17% of the overall production of all Austrian films preserved, only 17% are shown again and again and again within an empirical research field of, like, say, 15 to 20 years. And I think that really says something. I think that historiography needs to become more open towards these new aspects, and especially that aspects that used to be left out and of these very monolithic approaches and traditions. And representation needs reality in a way, of course, but as Hans-Robert Jauss put it, the discovery of the world as history, that can mean also the discovery of film as history, and also the idea of how it is produced and perceived and so on. The Brighton Conference in 1978, I put it here just as a remark for film history, because it was really a game changer when it comes to the history of silent film, but not of film after 45, so to speak. So people like Tom Gunning and André Godriot, these big names now, used to be in 78 the young wild ones, that saying, okay, let's move back to the archives and look at the films itself and not deal with the canonical texts about these films only. The project I would like to present, or which is my particular example for what I briefly sketched here on a theoretical level, is the project Shooting Women, which we started at the Film Archive in 2009. And we said, okay, let's look at this, the female input to film production from 69 to 99, especially because Austrian film wasn't international success on this level like today, in these days. So there is, and we have to take into account the different developments that shape this idea of female film production. If we look at the writing of Austrian film history, most of the time we can find a trend towards aestheticism. And this is really problematic because it says, oh, director A is influenced by director B, but if you look at the facts, so to speak, we can debate about facts as well, of course, but if he never had the possibility to see that film, we cannot claim that there's, we can claim something else, but we cannot claim direct influences. And I think that's one thing. Then this trend towards aestheticism always tries to exclude minor topics. It's really there because it's cool to write about the big names, yeah, and bash a few of these big names maybe, but, and most of the time the books that are produced under that concept aren't really introductions or critical introductions. No, they are more like workbooks, textbooks, really important, great books, but they are not usable in the end for a general user, so to speak. If you're not familiar with the big developments before. So I think there really is a problematic there. How to deal with these facts, of course. Within an archive, of course, we do have, the necessity and the obligation to work as a public servant, so to speak, to keep your private opinion about things on a very, very low level, especially when it comes to things you dislike. That's not really an option. And I think that's something that different scientific disciplines could work with, I think. The Shooting Women project so far, and we had a lot of, and I will talk about the positive outcome, so to speak, in a minute. I think that what really worked here is that it was a joint of effort. It always was. We started working together with the University of Vienna. We worked together with different, with the Austrian Directors Association, for instance. So there was always the idea of doing a non-monolithic research project when dealing with such highly sensitive topics like, yeah, gender issues, for instance. And when you had conducted a lot of interviews, and one of the female directors said to me, yeah, some people from the Austrian broadcasting told me, hey, you're good looking. Why do you care making films anyway? You can marry. So, and I think that's really something that's there, and that's part of social history of the film as well. And I think that should be, and we're doing it in a way, we are reverse engineering this idea. Positive results, so to speak, so far. We did a number of retrospectives, 2 times at the Diagonale, which is the major Austrian film festival dedicated to Austrian film. And I think that, and it was both times a huge success, and I think it's necessary. We did a big retrospective here in Vienna at the Metro Kino, the cinema of the Austrian film archive, which also lasted a month. So I think, and we only scratched on the surface of the film titles that are there from female directors. Yeah. And we also did a number of retrospectives together with the EGA Center here in Vienna, which is more political oriented, but I think it's also necessary to go some places else where non-film people, so to speak, are going. We produced a number of publications, of course. DVD releases is one thing. You may are familiar with this edition that is done by Der Standard and the Firma Hornzl and the Film Archive, der österreichische Film, the Austrian film, which is always debated under the aspect of canon, so to speak. And we smuggled a few of these titles in there, and we're still doing that. So, for instance, we're showing something like Küchengespräche mit Rebellinnen, a really important film. We showed that at the Diagonale this year, and this autumn we have the possibility to make a DVD release out of that title that is otherwise absolutely unknown, and it's such an important film. Another thing is that you gather more detailed information about films when you go back to the films. So I mentioned this writing about film history from books only approach before 78. And for instance, there is this really great film Reflexion by Edith Hirsch. It's one of the major avant-garde feature films, so to speak. Yeah, it's really great. And if you look at the scientific publications before we started doing Shooting Women, it's always mentioned as a short film. And then we came across it. We really dug it out from a cellar, so, yeah, literally. And it was an 80-minute feature. So I think that really makes a difference in the end. There's, of course, international and national awareness for this topic now, and I think we will push this as far as possible. And, of course, it does something about your approach towards things. So that you cannot go around and ask everybody else to be very self-reflexive without being itself. So, and I think that one of the positive outcomes, I think, is that we really rethought the conditions of preservation, how to make these things available on one hand, and we had the possibility to gather more films. More female directors showed up and said, okay, look, I made a film as well, and nobody ever mentioned it, but it's there. And this is one of the main advantages when working with an archival approach, so to speak. Next steps. Of course, we are not stopping right now with our reverse engineering of Austrian film history from this very specific angle. One is, of course, we will be part of the Diagonale again, and we will talk again about the politics of film production. I think that's really necessary. We are doing again a number of smaller retrospectives in Austria as well in Europe in general. We will push this idea of scientific publications, which are also dealing with the idea of archival theory, because what we are really lacking right now is something like papers that deal with the strategy, how to work with archives. What should be your mission statement? Is there really a code of conduct that is worth the name? There's not. So I think there is still a lot of work to do, and my colleague Kati Stöger and I, we are now doing this huge chunks of work, or would like to do that. Of course, new material pop up every few weeks, and I think that's necessary. And also new corporations are a possibility. That Paraflows for the Austrian Film Archive is one of the major corporations we do have every year, and we're really proud to do that. But for instance, we are now doing a big cooperation with the Austrian Ministry for Foreign Affairs. And we now have a possibility to say, okay, let's bundle a package of interesting films from female directors from Austria and make these available via the Austrian Cultural Fora all over the world. So I think there's really the possibility, and we're right now working on this package, and we're really selecting the films. So that's something that is happening. What we are doing also is a complete filmography. The idea of completion is something like that haunts every archive, and I think every scholar as well. And for our core field of interest, 69 to 99, we're right now working on a filmography that's in line with European standards. So there again, I come back to the idea, what I mentioned in the beginning, that the virtual and the real, so to speak, when it comes to film formats, is something we're always talking about one object, so to speak, in different media realizations and hauntings, so to speak. And these European standards, they are, because there was this question during the last talk, are there any standards we can work, although taking reverse engineering into account? And there are there. Like, this one is really done for all, so to speak, end user applications. And the other one is really a possibility to address all database issues that will, it's a scholar's wet dream, so to speak. This would be the data model for the smaller version of it. And it's really elegant, I think, and it really deals with also on the level of informatics with all necessary, information. That's more or less it. I rushed through it as good as possible and kept my 30 minutes. So thanks for your attention, and I'll be happy to take your questions now. Thanks.